Senator Devlin is close at hand. Representative Patrick will be with us momentarily as well. With that, we will open up. We'll just begin the discussions on Senate Bill 5530 relating to the Oregon Liquor Control Commission for the purposes of hearing the recommendations of legislative fiscal. We've worked this budget down with the exception of just the budget notes and then the final issues related to wrapping up Senate Bill 5530. Legislative Fiscal Office is represented this morning by Susie Jordan, and our clerk is Gina Harrington. And let's go ahead and have Susie give us an update on that budget note. Susie?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There are three budget notes that need your approval this morning. The first one has to do with the incentive program or plan that we're asking the Commission to develop for the agents. That is on page 3 of your memo that you have in front of you. I'll read the budget note into the record.
Let's go ahead and stop right there, and now we'll open this up as a work session on Senate Bill 5530, Oregon Liquor Control Commission, having a full complement of both House and Senate members here. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The Commission is directed to work with retail liquor agents through the Agents Advisory Council, the Department of Administrative Services, and the Legislative Fiscal Office to develop a financial incentive distribution plan which rewards agents for sales that exceed the close of session forecasts. Under this plan, agents will receive 50% of the sales that exceed the forecast, less variable costs, which include the cost of goods sold, licensing discounts, and bank card fees. The payments will be made as a special bonus outside of the normal agent's compensation system at the end of each quarter, as long as the plan results in no reduction of revenues to the general fund for the biennium from the close of session forecast. The Commission shall report to the Emergency Board no later than January 2004 the details of the plan and request expenditure limitation if necessary to implement it. The Commission shall provide a status report after the plan is implemented to the Emergency Board at the meeting nearest September 2004.
It's the intent of this subcommittee and the desired outcome to achieve at least an additional agent's compensation of the $1.5 million which the co-chairs set aside for us and then pulled back out, and to approach the average agent's compensation levels of the 8.88% that was desired at that time to the 9.25 that have been requested. And that's the intent that we're trying to work towards here. Are there any discussion relative to this budget note 2?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Senator Devlin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Winters and I worked to actually get the budget note a little better, which is, I believe, what we achieved with the chair's concurrence in doing that. Both of us still believe, and I can rarely speak for Senator Winters, but I think she'll agree with me now. Both of us believe that we really haven't addressed adequately the issue of agent compensation. We're hopeful that this budget note helps. But I think both of us are going to watch OLCC very closely over the next year and a half. And if this budget note and if the other efforts of OLCC don't result in some level of compensation increase for agents, Senator Winters and I have discussed the potential of jointly introducing legislation to basically give the rate of compensation issue, taking it away from the commission and giving it to the legislature itself. And so, or to basically actually put it forward as a
statutory issue.
As a statutory issue to change the compensation level.
I appreciate that, and that's why I wanted to make sure that the record was adequately documented what the intention of the subcommittee is to attempt to approach the average agent compensation of at least the 8.88% that we had previously discussed and potentially up to the 9.25, which was the minimum end of the request. Any further discussion? Thank you very much.
I just want to, Mr. Chair, since you used my name and I have had this conversation, so that
with her permission.
With his permission. every session since I've been back here in 99, this has been a topic of discussion. And every session we come and it has not been resolved. And I think we need to move towards having some form of resolution with this particular issue. And that's what both Senator Devlin and I are hoping to achieve. We need to be able to say that no longer do we have to come in as legislators and still deal with the issue of adequate compensation for the agent. It's likened to we have an organization that produces income for us and are responsible and who makes a substantial investment to get that to get those general funds, and yet at the same time I don't believe that we're treating them as fairly. It's like any other business. When you're investing, you expect to get a return on your dollar, and I think that's at the heart of this issue.
Thank you, Senator, and again, it's hoped that that by putting an incentive flow program forward, the commission will take note that it is the legislative intent, at least from the budget standpoint, to go ahead and attempt to try and bring up those compensations again to a closer to a 9% level from the 8.54. With that, is there any further discussion? Representative Patridge? Representative Patridge now moves budget note 2.
Mr. Chairman, I know this is the work session and you don't take testimony, but there's something that I think you need to clarify.
Do you want to join us, Phil, at the desk? Phil Lang, chair of the commission. This is a work session, so...
Mr. Chairman, I'm Phil Lang. I'm chairman of the Oregon Liquor Control Commission. And Senator Devlin said something about the setting of the agent's compensation, and the commission does not have that authority. The legislature has always done that by a budget note, and we have not been in a position to change that because of your control of the expenditure limitation. And I would just like to say that if it was in our control, this issue might have been settled previously. It's been a situation where the legislature has not been inclined to make that change, but the commission has.
Director Lang, let me just ask one question relative to the budget note, and with the understanding of what it is we're trying to do. Does this give you any help in bringing it closer to where you want to be?
We can come up with a plan. I think the most difficult thing in administering this is this quarterly payment that you're suggesting, because the sales during the biennium fluctuate some from quarter to quarter, and we may have to withhold some money so that at the end, if there was a precipitous drop in sales at the end of the biennium, that the agents wouldn't end up owing us money back for what we had paid them at the end of each quarter.
And again, it's our objective, but is if the sales do increase, that the agents would be rewarded accordingly.
Right.
Thank you very much. Senator Devlin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to indicate to the chairman, Mr. Lang, that I did misspeak in terms of you having that authority. I think what Senator Winters and I really don't want to do but may have to do in the next session is to really highlight this issue. And the only way to really highlight this issue is to bring in legislation directly on the issue itself and not take it entirely through this budget process, because we've had so many potential things going back and forth that we could do it, then we couldn't do it, we can do it, then we can't do it. Now, supposedly, we can't actually increase the rate, or at least we can't get the concurrence of the co-chairs to increase the rate. But even with that, we do know, and I'm not trying to make any difficulties here, Mr. Chairman, we do know that even the upping the markup is back on the table again in terms of negotiations in this building, and that was supposed to be one of the ways of potentially providing greater compensation. Now it's back on the table again, and we still haven't dealt effectively, I don't think, with this issue. Hopefully the budget note helps, but as I said, Senator Winters and I will be watching this closely in the next 18 months.
And it's my understanding, Director Lang, that the compensation markup rate is corrected also through the budget process, but largely administered by the commission. So,
yeah, I don't believe the markup rate has ever been directed by the legislature previously. It is within the province of the commission. commission to adjust the markup rate.
And the attempt to try and increase the markup rate by 10% would be driven by budget revenue anticipated that we try and get X amount of dollars additional. And again, that's within the, I guess, the venue of the department, of the legislative branch, to go ahead and attempt to do that. But largely that rests with the commission to go ahead and bring those expectations about. And that's why, again, my anxiety is that the record is replete that your desires to increase the compensation rate of the agents is as much as we can possibly do, augmented by the budget note to encourage that to happen, so that we can try and get it up based if there is an increase, which there was in the last legislative biennial period.
That's about $9 million.
Right, that the agents be rewarded for their additional compensation or by additional compensation, not just at the 8.54% rate. With that, thank you very much, members, for that discussion. Representative Patrick has moved the budget note 2. Any further discussion? Hearing and seeing no objection, budget note 2.
Thank you.
4 on page 3.
The second budget note that still needs to be approved is number 4 under the budget notes on page 4. The subcommittee expects the commission to monitor the performance of assigning district representatives from the Portland office to serve stores in eastern and southern Oregon. The commission will report to the emergency board by its September 2004 meeting the benefits and efficiencies gained and changes implemented through such redistricting to ensure no duplication of efforts nor increased costs.
This was as a result of the statewide redistricting and the numbers of districts that we had out there. The concern that we made sure that it didn't cost any additional to have put in the new district method. Is there any objection? Representative Patridge moves note 4. Any objection? Hearing and seeing none, so ordered. Number 5.
The fifth budget note, commission is directed to survey the 20 control states to establish a comparison of the cost of liquor in other states to the state of Oregon costs. The results of the survey shall be reported to the emergency board by April 2004.
It's our understanding that the survey, informal surveys, are ongoing with the other members of the control states, and the attempt is here to make certain that Oregon is getting the very best price with regard to the cost of liquor as compared to the other 20 control states, and then make a report as to where we are with regard to the control states. Representative Patridge now moves budget note 5. Is there any objection? Hearing and seeing none, so ordered. Finally, the motion to approve the amendments to Senate Bill 5530 for a total budget in the amount of $81,188,775, including non-limited expenditure amounting to $2,160,045. Representative Patridge moves the motion to amend the bill accordingly. Any further discussion? Any objection? Hearing and seeing none, so ordered. Thank you very much. I think that accomplishes. Yes, I just want to make sure that accomplishes everything of our business before we get ready to move that to full. Is there any objection now? Representative Patrick moves that we move 5530, Senate Bill 5530, Oregon Liquor Control Commission to the full for a due pass recommendation. Is there any objection? Hearing and seeing none, order that to the full with a due pass recommendation on behalf of the committee. Carrying it to Senator Devlin, would you like to carry that on the Senate side?
I think he's doing it.
Okay.
I'll carry it.
Okay, Senator Winters. Senator Winters to the full and to the Senate side and to the House.
She can speak for me.
Representative Johnson, thank you very much. Thank you very kindly. We will close the Senate Bill 5530. Goes this afternoon to full.
It goes this afternoon?
Yep. This afternoon. What time is full?
3 o'clock?
Okay, 3:30.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Senator Devlin.
Mr. Chairman, you're probably aware that Representative Johnson and I have to leave at 9.
Okay, let's
Senator Winters has to leave.
We're going to go to House Bill
5577.
Okay. Okay, we will open a public hearing on House Bill 2577. It's on the calendar for today. Let's go ahead and hear Legislative Fiscal.
And Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this bill, House Bill 2577, extends the life of the Oregon Telecommunications Coordinating Council. This Bill. This is a council that is scheduled to sunset, I believe, January of 2004. The bill before you would extend the sunset date to January 2nd, 2006. You also have an amendment that has been passed around that would change the sunset date to January of 2005. The amendment has been approved by both co-chairs and Representative Close, whose committee passed this bill out in unanimous.
And with us today in the witness box, we have Senator David Nelson. Welcome, Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr.
Proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is David Nelson, a senator from Northeast Oregon. I represent the counties of Umatilla, Morrow, Union, and Wallowa counties. I'm here to testify in support of 2577. A little history on this whole issue. The Telecommunication Act was passed in 1996, which completely changed the whole industry around. In 1999, the Oregon legislature saw fit to create Senate Bill 622, which basically built the infrastructure in the state of Oregon, and which is now just coming online, if you can believe that, 4 years after we're done. I think at the end of this year, we'll have all of the concentric rings, and that was a cooperative effort with the U.S. West at the time, now Quest. They came up with about $120 million in exchange for some regulatory reform. The real push behind that whole thing was this group of people that basically are asking here today to continue this committee or this group that they have going on. The energy that's come out of 622 and has developed these things is still being cared for. There's Kathy Breton and Link Shadley and Rob Myers and folks in the audience that have been involved in this committee for basically since the inception, maybe even before that. And the importance of this bill is to keep this group together, give them the authority that comes from the state of Oregon. We're not going to cost any money, as I understand it. There's no appropriations, anything of that nature. This is truly a grassroots effort that's pushing this whole development of telecommunications forward in the state of Oregon. And if you're not familiar with the term now, should be thinking about the term Wi-Fi, which is wireless fidelity. That means basically maybe the answer to the last mile. What Senate Bill 622 has just created, the basic infrastructure, did not answer the last mile issue. It's potentially that this is the answer. We don't know whether it is. This industry changes so much. This group is together. They've got lots of ideas. They have the energy. They take a lot of pressure off us in the legislature because they do a lot of the work and figure out the ideas and bring people together. So I'm greatly in support of this bill. I know there's people out here that know a lot more about it than probably you'd like to listen to. So with that, I just indicate my support and offer to answer any questions I possibly can.
Thank you, Senator. And there is an amendment. We had information that this commission was scheduled to go through 06 and then information back just to go through 05. And there is an amendment to go ahead and bring it through 05. They figured they could get the rest of the work done by that time, I guess.
I'd like to see it go to 06, actually. I mean, I think this is a group that's going to stay together, but what's possible and what's doable, I think it's very important to keep this thing together. January of 05, we're just starting.
03.
The sunset, what, it was 05?
04. Presently is scheduled for, according to the bill, to go to 06, and there's some communication indicated it only needed to go to 05, and so we're proposing that it just go ahead and go through 05.
Well, I would like to see it go through 06 just because I think this group has energy. But they can probably talk about that more and give you a better idea from that.
Thanks. Thank you very much, Senator.
I appreciate
it. Any questions, Senator Nielsen? Thank you, Senator. We have signed up Kathy Britton and Rob Myers. If those folks would like to come up, Bill Penn Hall is on the list as well. So we can certainly get three chairs there if we need to. And I guess I probably ought to announce that we are not going to hear, we're not going to work session Senate Bill 5543 to Secretary of State, and we will just continue on with our public hearing of House Bill 2577, and it won't go to full today. It won't make it to our full this afternoon. So, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Bill Penhollow. I'm with the Association of Oregon Counties. Today, However, I am serving as support staff to the Oregon Telecommunications Coordinating Council, which I have through the previous interim. With me today are Kathy Britton from LeGrand and Rob Myers from Condon, both members of the Oregon Telecommunication Coordinating Council. What I would like to do is just follow up on your staff's summarization of the bill. What it does is to extend the Oregon Telecommunications Coordinating Council for another 2 years. The council felt that it was important that they have an additional 2 years to complete the work that they have begun. And Ms. Britton and Mr. Meyer will talk to you about that in just a moment. It expands the membership on the council to include additional representation from the telecommunications industry, from the education community, as well as the tribes. The bill also sets out a reporting requirement provision, an item which is added to a report that the PUC makes biannually to the legislature regarding telecommunications services, and that is found in Section 2 of the bill. As indicated, there is no fiscal impact. The members serve at the expense of the councils that they or consortia they represent. And so this has, as Senator Nelson said, been truly a grassroots effort. The Association of Oregon Counties, the Oregon Economic and Development and OECDD, and I'll pay my fine, Mr. Chair. And
you can make your check directly to the American Cancer Society.
Okay.
Representative Johnson and I have wrapped up the acronym.
And the Department of Administrative Services have shared in the staff support to this council. And that's what we would propose to continue. But also, as you see in the bill, we would ask, and they have agreed to help us, the League of Oregon Cities, to support us in this area. So that's the summation of the bill. I'd like to turn now to Ms. Brown and have her talk about...
Just a moment. Representative Johnson, I know that we're up against the timeline for you and Senator Devlin, and I appreciate it.
I just wanted to excuse myself to the witnesses. We unfortunately have a conflict this morning, and I need to go.
Thank you very much. We'll just continue on with the public hearing on House Bill 2577. Thank you, Representative Johnson. And we'll excuse Senator Devlin when he returns back in, too. Please proceed.
Thank you, Chairman Butler and members of the committee. My name is Catherine Britton. I am a representative from Eastern Oregon Telecommunications Consortium to the Council. I'm also chair of the Telehealth Alliance of Oregon, which was one of the accomplishments of this committee this council during the past year. I wanted to stress to you what I feel is the importance of the continuation of this council. A lot of times the work that the council does isn't always readily apparent, and a lot of what we do is kind of called the hurry up and wait game. We create the environment for things to happen, and then we encourage people to follow through with it. For example, one of the things that happened was the outgrowth of the Telehealth Alliance for Oregon. That group, along with the council, created House Joint Resolution 4, which encourages reimbursement. We were able, thanks to the legislative support of this council, to encourage the payers to be at the table. And so we were going forward with a payment plan for telehealth that was not thought of 5 years ago when I began working with the payers to reimburse for telemedicine. I think that one of the things that was a very strong outcome from this council was the bringing together of the healthcare community and the education community. We have no good venue right now to distribute healthcare education via distance learning. And one of the concerns was that here we have separate networks building separately that could be brought together to create a mutual and supportive network for healthcare education as well as for healthcare and education separately. That was the result of the efforts of this council, and hopefully will be a subcommittee of this council should it continue. One of the things that we continue to work on is public-private partnerships. And while we don't have an overarching public-private partnership policy, we have had some small victories in some areas to create public-private partnerships for the benefit of telecommunications. As far as future looking forward goes, I don't think we're going to be in the business of really planning additional infrastructure. The impetus to get the initial rings built and the middle mile work done, I think were the work of this council. What we did do was we gave the energy to the local providers to begin to create last mile solutions. We have given them opportunities to look at new technologies and to explore them with the council and to then go back and make some decisions that would benefit their communities. I think the telecommunications carriers in the state have done an excellent job of providing us with the major solutions that we need for the middle mile and the big solutions. And to their credit, they have, with or without 622, they have done a very good job. It's our turn now to respond to that and to say, okay, this is how we are going to use that infrastructure. You've made the investment. Now we need to create the applications and to foster those applications so that that infrastructure is well utilized. Right now, I believe the take rate for broadband is only 12%. That's not very high, and that's really hard to turn around and look at my telecommunications friends in the back and say, you know, this was a good job that you did, but now it's time for us to hold our end of it up. The council can play the role of encouraging applications, of teaching people how to use the broadband appropriately, creating strategies for doing that, bringing in grant money for doing that, and I think that that's the big impetus that we see for the continuation of the council, and that's the reason for expanding the membership. So I want to thank you for your time, and if you have any questions, I'll be happy to answer them.
Thank you very much. Mr. Myers?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Rob Myers, and I'm from Condon. I sit on the Telecommunications Coordinating Council representing Frontier Telenet, which is an ORS 190 comprised of Gillum, Sherman, Reeder counties, and North Central ESD. I'd like to talk to you briefly this morning about the importance of the Telecommunications Coordinating Council with regard to the manner in which it addresses rural and frontier rural telecommunications issues. They're critical issues to us because in communities that, quite frankly, are in the throes of economic survival, and that's putting it mildly, telecommunications we see as one of the only ways that we're going to be able to revitalize economies that desperately need revitalizing. And given that, then I believe that the coordination of telecommunications activities statewide is very important to the process in terms of being able to provide rural and frontier rural communities with the telecommunications assets they need to be able to reinvent themselves in forms that they haven't been able to do previously. And I think that's in my own mind, that's a critical issue, that the efficient deployment of telecommunications infrastructure and the avoidance of duplication of resources and duplication of effort on behalf of rural communities is important in terms of being able to provide, as I said, the necessary assets. And it also helps us be able to identify and, to the extent that it's possible, anticipate problems that may need to be resolved in the deployment of that infrastructure, and also to be able to recognize and properly employ the assets that are currently available. And those are issues that from a rural and frontier rural perspective are extremely important. And telecommunications is important, specific to distance learning as well. I've been involved with a distance learning program called the Frontier Learning Network since the legislature approved that program and funded it in 1999. It has since become probably what I would say is arguably the most forward-thinking, innovative distance learning program in the United States, and also one of the best-kept secrets in the United States. But it's one of the ways that we can utilize an existing asset to assist in providing connectivity and applications and content for both health and education in terms of being able to provide those services statewide. As Kathy said earlier, we're in the process of bringing the two health and education communities together to combine those with distance learning and utilize existing and anticipated technology to be able to provide services to users at the other end of the system where it's actually necessary in the most efficacious manner that we can. And that's going to take a little bit of time, and that's why we're asking for an extension. We can't do that overnight, but we're in the process of doing that right now. We've got a committee that's formed that will address those issues. So I won't take up any more of your time. I'd be glad to answer questions if you have any.
Thank you very much, Mr. Myers. Questions for Ms. Brittner, Mr. Myers, Mr. Penhollow. Rob, wasn't there just a meeting in Conan just recently? I think I was invited to come up and...
There was a regional telecommunications planning meeting in Condon. Yes.
Put everybody in town all at one time. downtown Condon.
That's true. And then if we had the facilities, which we actually have at the school and at through NorCor up at the courthouse, we would be able to bring in people by video conference, but we don't have the bandwidth.
And the Frontier Telenet. Is that located out of Bandon then, or out of Condon rather?
Yes, it is.
Okay. You folks all participated in it then? Got your programs up and running, and you're all up to speed then?
Well, Mr. Chair, yes, we are, and thank you for asking. We started the Frontier Telenet process about it almost 2 years ago now, and the Frontier Network preceded that, and we realized from working through the Frontier Learning Network process that telecommunications connectivity and affordable bandwidth were going to be the keys to be able to provide those services.
Now, is that part of the mission then of the Telecommunications Council is to figure out how you're going to provide that or how private companies? And that's one concern I have, and I'm communicated with Mr. Penhollow, that it just appeared to me that much of the work, certainly the private industry is the guiding and directing and entire force behind the overall process. What's the relationship then? And that's why I was interested in the Frontier Telenet. What's the relationship of the actual local telephone companies with regard to the Oregon Telecommunications Council?
Well, Mr. Chair, I can only speak, of course, for Frontier Telenet, but from Frontier Telenet's perspective, it is Frontier Telenet's intent now and has always been to partner where and whenever possible with private companies to be able to provide those kinds of telecommunication services. Frontier Telenet has no interest in becoming a telephone company, absolutely none, now or ever. And as a result, we're constantly looking for ways to create synergistic efforts with public telephone companies, private telephone companies, any kind of private sector enterprise that might either now or in the future provide services as a result of having partnered with us.
So really the efforts of Frontier Telenet is to encourage all of the private companies to come together to assist in providing that. Now, they don't do that of their own motion as a result of the fact that they're for-profit companies?
In areas like ours, Gillum, Sherman, and Wheeler counties, Mr. Chair, are comprised 4,000 square miles of pretty rugged terrain. I know you're familiar with that. With 5,000 people, it's very difficult for a private sector entity to make a legitimate business case to build infrastructure to be able to provide affordable broadband access to those people. They're in the process of it, but it is our feeling right along, it has always been, that if we can create a public asset that provides a benefit for a private sector entity and at the same time provides the citizenry of those three counties and anybody else for that matter with services that they otherwise would not have had, that's part of what our role is.
Let me just ask with regard to, and I didn't see the Oregon Telecommunications Council anywhere in the process in my district recently, as we have been tracking through some problems out of Cal Valley in northern Niagara County. It borders a portion of Grant and Baker County out there, too, servicing in the mountain portion of rural eastern Oregon. Not seeing the Oregon Telecommunications Council, Coordinating Council, at the table, maybe they've got the Adam Smith's invisible hand there, but I didn't see them at the table, but I saw private industry step forward and meet its obligation to those folks. Did the coordinating council have something to do with that?
Chair Butler, the coordinating council is made up of members of all of the consortia, and as issues come up, various representatives from the council or from those consortia represent the council at those meetings. We have also discussed the Cal Valley issue at the coordinating council itself. It was brought to us by Link Shadley, and we talked about it, and we talked about ways that we might provide some support for that effort. But the council, as the specific representatives from those consortia, don't always sit at each community meeting. We count on our consortium members to represent the council at those meetings.
Ms. Britton, that ultimately it was really just the telephone company's responsibility of their own motion. They move forward with it based upon their own economic model. I guess I'm having problems with the folks in one room discussing it and singing songs about it and sitting on hard benches and standing giving testimonials. Then I see another group of folks that say, We think we can make a case for this to move forward.
Right. The telcos are at the table at the council. A lot of the work that the council does is to encourage the telcos to come up with those solutions. I think they've done a very good job of that. The council provides the impetus for them to keep moving forward and to keep finding solutions.
The mission of the Oregon Telecommunications.
The mission of the organization is to be able to provide access to all Oregonians to broadband telecommunications and to provide access to the applications. I think what we've done, and I'm going to turn this back to Mr. Shadley here, but I think what the council has done is provide the impetus for telecommunications companies to go forward in discussing the issues.
Provide the impetus.
Right.
Help me with that, please.
To discuss where the needs are, to encourage.
I don't know.
Well, I think that they know, but to create the solutions maybe a little more quickly than they would have under their normal business plan. I feel certain that some of the efforts that NOAANet has made have been because we have talked about areas where the need is greatest, and they have taken that back, or Mr. Shadley has taken that back to NOAANet and saying, you know, how can we help to create an environment here where we can create broadband access?
I'm just having a little trouble connecting the dots. Representative
Okay,
Etheridge?
Let me
go ahead and have the members.
Question with staff first. I saw Mr. Irwin's letter on the second page. On the fiscal, I didn't see that there was any expense, and then I was wondering, it says in his letter there's a one-time expense to the PUC.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I think that's in response to something that the PUC had submitted when our office was doing the fiscal impact. We felt that what the PUC, as I remember, had said, well, there would be some $30,000 startup for something. And upon further review, we felt that the limited amount of effort that was required by PUC could be absorbed within its existing budget. So I just saw this also, but I had reviewed the fiscal impact file and still feel that there's no fiscal.
Thank you, Dallas. Mr. Chair, just a statement for the record. We had this up before. I think we worked on this during the interim, maybe too. Bill and I have had discussions about this on more than one occasion. I will not be supporting this legislation, just for the record. I don't think it's a necessary step. So I think that there's many private entities and other people that can do it, and frankly, I don't find it helpful to add 8 new members onto the Telecommunications Coordinating Council to try and do something like this.
Does that 8 new members? Are there all these new members? Or these replacement members for some of the folks?
Well, I think it moves from 12 to 20 members of the Coordinating Council. At least that's how I read a particular piece of legislation. I just don't think it's something. If they want to get together, and if communities want to get together, or the League, or the Association of Oregon Counties want to get together, that's fine with me help do some of these things, but I don't think this is something that rises to the level of being necessary to be in state statute. We put something forward to allow them to do that. I don't think it's necessarily proven its worth over the course of this last biennium, so I'm not interested, even if there is a minimal cost to PUC or OECDD in continuing this effort, because it doesn't have the force of law. It doesn't need to be in state statute, in my opinion.
Thank you, St. Badgers. Catherine, did you want to make another statement? Then I guess we've got another. Mr. Shadler is here, too. So.
Chair Butler, I would like to respond to some of your questions to Mr. Myers and also to Representative Patridge. The bill only adds formally the members of CoastNet, Frontier Telenet, and the Gorge Consortium and the South Coast Telecommunications Consortium. The council had the authority to bring those people to the table as the consortiums were formed. We just wanted to make sure that they were included and recognized by the legislature. This is an open table. Anyone who comes to that table is welcome. But I think that the importance of having a table that is sanctioned by the legislature means that the interest of the state of Oregon is there for telecommunications, and not just the infrastructure, not just the wires, not just the equipment that's moved in, but in the development of the applications. You cannot operate on the build it and they will come strategy for this. It's extremely important that we educate people about the use of it and about the wise use of it. We talk about working in silos, about healthcare works in a silo, education works in a silo, e-government works in a silo. This is the only place within all of those groups where those groups can come together and can work on shared issues and can develop the education and the support needed for people in rural areas and in underserved areas to learn how to use and to develop the applications that they so much wanted when we began to work on the infrastructure. For example, when we were working with the community of Burns, we were working with CenturyTel, and CenturyTel put the infrastructure in. And we said, okay, how are we going to handle people who don't know how to hook up the modems, people who don't know how to determine what level of web strength they need to use for their businesses, how far do they need to expand it, what's going to happen when some web shyster comes in and says, you know, I have a plan I can sell you for $3,000 and it's going to make your business wonderful, and how do they gauge that, how do they judge that?
Maybe making Representative Patridge's case at that particular point, if we're not careful, Ms. Redden, because really the private industry and the Attorney General's office and those other folks can, you know, that's their mission to do that as opposed to establishing an additional arm of the government.
But it's not their mission to create good consumers of broadband telecommunications, and I think that is what this council has to offer.
That's part of the mission, then, is to...
Right, if you're going to...
Communication consumers?
Yes, that's what this council is all about, is telecommunications consumers. We work with the providers of telecommunications, but it's for the benefit of the consumer.
Thank you. Link, did you want to talk about that here? I have known that.
Good morning, Chair.
Maybe we better get Senator Wendell.
I have a perplexed look on our face. Because what you're describing is I'm trying to put it into context of where you're going beyond, I think, of the scope, and I'd have to share some of the comments made by Representative Patridge, that these are activities that the private sector, you know, I think would be involved with. And if there is, for some reason, that it isn't connecting, they need to make the dots connected. I'm sitting here struggling with your mission, if that truly is your mission. You know, here, I'm here in Salem, and we don't have a special counsel to set up to educate me as to how to use the systems. You know, the infrastructure was put in place. I think that was very valuable when we passed that legislation. But I'm trying in my mind to see the necessity of continuing the council, and you need to let me know what it is that this council, besides being a consumer educator, what are the special needs outside of that.
Link, you want to play clean up bat here as we wrap up here? For I think I've got Senator Winters that has a meeting at 9:30 that I need to get her to, and we already lost our Democratic members. So please proceed, Link.
Chairman Butler, good morning. My name is Link Shadley. I work for Norinet, Oregon. I've been a rural advocate for a number of years in different hats. Cal Valley is very close to my heart. I remember having two flat tires at the same time up on Cottonwood Ridge when I was looking for radio repeater sites, talking to a farmer trying to get him to donate land up on the top of Cal Valley Butte, because at the time we felt wireless was the only possible alternative for those 11 families in Cal Valley. And they had been talking to the private providers for years, including Oregon Telephone. And there was simply no way to make a business case for stringing about 20 miles of anything to serve between 9 and 11 families out there. Several of the rural advocates began to understand the problem at Cal Valley. We basically came together and talked. We didn't go seeking any funds. We didn't go seeking legislation. We looked at alternatives. We brought in wireless providers to get estimates. In the process of talking about that at a number of community meetings, it raised the awareness. Oregon Telephone out of Mount Vernon, who I am eternally grateful to, decided maybe this was a big enough problem and had enough public attention now that they should address it. They got some new owners. They went for rural utility service fundings. And at the last word that I know of, they are now bringing fiber to Cal Valley to serve at least 9 of those 11 families. And except for one hiccup over a little purple flower, they're going to do it. That, I think, is a classic example of the benefit of the council, that simply spreading the word, raising the awareness about specific problems, especially those of us who are in rural areas and on the other side of that digital divide, and we're saying help. And the council is the first time that we have really had the attention of the legislature. Before this, we've had rural advocate meetings that have been going on for, 14 years that I've been involved in it. We would try to find one champion within this body and educate them and help carry the message. But finally, with the Oregon Telecommunications Coordinating Council, we had a more formal roundtable where we could come together, we could develop a plan, a report, present it to the legislature, and I guess have some legitimacy. And it gave the rural people a lot of hope because it said this legislature does care about folks on the other side of the digital divide. We're not asking for dollars. We're not asking for staff time. And it just helps formalize and legitimize the process and makes it easier for us. And it stimulates the local people, stimulates those local councils, gives them a purpose. There's a wonderful education piece that goes on within each of those local councils and local community. So I strongly support this. It's a grassroots effort, and I think it needs to continue. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Link. Questions of Mr. Shadley? Thank you very much for your testimony and your input. We'll go ahead and bring this back to the co-chairs for rescheduling. With that, we will stand adjourned. And Representative Patridge, you've got an announcement for public safety?
Well, I think we're on hold for public safety.
Okay.
At the call of the chair, we're going to do it.
Okay, I think you're posted for 9 or 9:30. So,
right.
With that, we'll close the hearing, the public hearing on House Bill 2577. Thank you.